Chapter 68. The Amy Bigelow lay moored alongside a long modern wharf that had been built by Soviet engineers. Beyond her, a few hundred yards across the dock channel, the cream-colored hull of the Ozero Zaisson sat dark and deserted. The lights of the city sparkled across the black waters of the harbor. A few clouds drifted down from the mountains, crossing the city and heading out to sea. The Russian-built command car turned off the Boulevard des Emperados, followed by two heavy military trucks. The convoy moved slowly through the dock area and stopped at the boarding ramp of the Amy Bigelow. A sentry stepped from inside a guard shack and cautiously approached the car. "Do you have permission to be in this area?" he asked. Clark, wearing the uniform of a Cuban colonel, gave the sentry an arrogant stare. "Send for the officer of the guard," he ordered sharply, "and say sir when you address an officer." Recognizing Clark's rank under the yellowish sodium vapor lights that illuminated the waterfront, the sentry stiffened to attention and saluted. "Right away, sir. I'll call him." The sentry ran back to the guard shack and picked up a portable transmitter. Clark shifted in his seat uneasily. Deception was vital. Strong-arm tactics fatal. If they had stormed the ships with guns blazing, alarms would have sounded throughout the city's military garrisons. Once alerted, and with their backs to the wall, the Russians would have been forced to set off the explosions ahead of schedule. A captain came through a door of a nearby warehouse, paused a moment to study the parked column, and then walked up to the passenger side of the command car and addressed Clark. "Captain Roberto Eras," he said, saluting. "How can I help you, sir?" "Colonel Ernesto Perez," replied Clark. "I've been ordered to relieve you and your men." Eras looked confused. "My orders were to guard the ships until noon tomorrow." "They've been changed," Clark said curtly. "Have your men assemble for departure back to their barracks." "If you don't mind, Colonel, I wish to confirm this with my commanding officer." "And he'll have to call General Malena, and the general is asleep in bed." Clark stared at him with narrowed, cold eyes. "A letter attesting to your insubordination won't look good when your promotion to major comes due." "Please, sir, I'm not refusing to obey a superior." "Then I suggest you accept my authority." "Yes, Colonel, I'm not doubting you." He caved in. "I'll assemble my men." "You do that." 10 minutes later, Captain Eras had his 24-man security force lined up and ready to move out. The Cubans took the change of guard willingly. They were all happy to be relieved and returned to their barracks for a night's sleep. Eras did not seem to notice that the colonel's men remained hidden inside the darkness of the lead truck. "This your entire unit?" asked Clark. "Yes, sir. They're all accounted for." "Even the men guarding the next ship?" "Sorry, Colonel. I left sentries at the boarding ramp to make sure no one boarded until your men were dispersed. We can drive by and pick them up as we leave." "Very well, Captain. The rear truck is empty. Order them to board. You can take my car. I'll have my aide pick it up later at your headquarters." "That's good of you, sir. Thank you." Clark had his hand on a tiny 25-caliber silenced automatic that was sitting loose in his pants pocket, but he left it in place. The Cubans were already climbing over the tailgate of the truck under the direction of a sergeant. Clark offered his seat to Eras and casually strolled toward the silent truck containing Pitt and the Cuban seamen. The vehicles had turned around and were leaving the dock area when a staff car carrying a Russian officer drove up and stopped. He leaned out the window of the rear seat and stared, a suspicious frown on his face. "What's going on here?" Clark slowly approached the car and passed around the front end, assuring himself that the only occupants were the Russian and his driver. "Changing of the guard." "I know of no such orders." "They came from General Velikov," said Clark, halting no more than 2 feet from the rear door. He could now see the Russian was also a colonel. "I've just come from the general's headquarters to inspect security. Nothing was said about changing the guard." The colonel opened the door as if to get out of the car. "There must be a mistake." "No mistake," said Clark. He pressed the door shut with his knees and shot the colonel between the eyes. Then he coldly put 2 bullets in the back of the driver's head. Minutes later, the car was set in gear and rolled into the dark waters between the wharves. Manny led the way, followed by Pitt and 4 Cuban merchant seamen. They rushed up the boarding ramp to the main deck of the Amy Bigelow and split up. Pitt climbed the ladder topside, while the rest dropped down a companionway to the engine room. The wheelhouse was dark, and Pitt left it that way. He spent the next half hour checking the ship's electronic controls and speaker system with a flashlight until he had every lever and switch firmly planted in his mind. He picked up the ship's phone and rang the engine room. A full minute went by before Manny answered.
"What in the hell do you want?"
"Just checking in," said Pitt, "ready when you are."
"You got a long wait, mister."
Before Pitt could reply, Clark stepped into the wheelhouse. "You talking to Manny?" he asked.
"Yes."
"Get him up here now." Pitt passed on Clark's brusque command and received a barrage of four-letter words before ringing off. Less than a minute later, Manny burst through the door reeking of sweat and oil.
"Make it quick," he snapped to Clark. "I got a problem."
"Mo has it even worse."
"I already know. The engines have been shut down."
"Are yours in running shape?"
"Why wouldn't they be?"
"The Soviet crew took sledgehammers to every valve on the Ozero Zaisson," said Clark heavily. "Mo says it would take 2 weeks to make repairs."
"Jack will have to tow him out to sea with the tug," Pitt said flatly.
Manny spat through the wheelhouse door.
"You'll never make it back in time to move the oil tanker. The Russians ain't blind. They'll catch on to the game soon as the sun comes up."
Clark nodded his head in slow understanding.
"I fear he's right."
"Where do you stand?" Pitt asked Manny.
"If this tub had diesels, I could start her up in 2 hours, but she's got steam turbines."
"How much time do you need?"
Manny looked down at the deck, his mind running over the lengthy and complicated procedures.
"We're starting with a dead plant. First thing we did was get the emergency diesel generator going and light off the burners in the furnace to heat the fuel oil. The lines have to be drained of condensation, the boilers fired up, and the auxiliaries put online. Then wait for the steam pressure to rise enough to operate the turbines. We're looking at 4 hours, providing everything goes right."
4 hours? Clark felt dazed.
"Then the Amy Bigelow can't clear the harbor before daylight," said Pitt.
"That wraps it." There was a tired certainty in Clark's voice.
"No, that doesn't wrap it," said Pitt firmly. "If we get even one ship past the harbor entrance, we cut the death toll by a third."
"And we all die," added Clark. "There'll be no escape."
2 hours ago, I'd have given us a 50-50 chance of surviving. Not now. Not when your old friend Velikov spots his monstrous plan steaming over the horizon. And lest we forget the Soviet colonel sitting on the bottom of the bay, he'll be missed before long, and a regiment will come looking for him.
"And there's that captain of the security guards," said Manny. "He'll wise up damn quick when he catches hell for leaving his duty area without proper orders."
The thump of heavy diesel engines slowly amplified outside, and a ship's bell gave off 3 muted rings. Pitt peered through the bridge windows.
"Jack's coming alongside with the tug."
He turned and faced the lights of the city. They reminded him of a vast jewelry box. He began to think of the multitude of children who went to bed looking forward to the holiday celebrations. He wondered how many of them would never wake up.
"There's still hope," he said at last.
Quickly, he outlined what he thought would be the best solution for reducing the devastation and saving most of Havana. When he finished, he looked from Manny to Clark.
"Well, is it workable?"
"Workable?" Clark was numb. "Myself and 3 others, holding off half the Cuban army for 3 hours? It's downright homicidal."
"Manny?"
Manny stared at Pitt, trying to make something of the craggy face that was barely visible from the lights on the wharf. Why would an American throw away his life for people who would shoot him on sight? He knew he'd never find the answer in the darkened wheelhouse of the Amy Bigelow, and he shrugged in slow finality.
"We're wasting time," he said, as he turned and headed back to the ship's engine room.